Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. This morning is Sunday, June 3rd, 2018. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will begin with a prayer from Florence.
Yes, from Mrs. Eddy's prayer given at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And for miscellaneous writings by Mary Baker Eddy. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind. For then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Before we get started, there are a couple things I felt I should mention. One is, try not to mention this often, maybe we should mention it more, but our church does exist through donations. When Mrs. Evans was here, we had a certain amount of money in our church fund, and if it ever dropped below that, we all would get phone calls and everyone would dig in their pockets and give more. In other words, if we were spending more than we were taking in. Now, we don't do that anymore, and we still spend more than we take in. And God has been very abundantly supplying us with what we need. But if we continue, you know, after a certain amount of time, it means we will close shop. So there are many of you out there that give and give freely at the tithe, and we are very, very grateful for those who do that. And then there are others who perhaps don't give, and we know there are many who just come to the YouTube and maybe never give anything. So I want you all to be praying about this, that God abundantly meets our needs. Our church is going to need a new roof. We have had our roof since 1925. It served us very well. Bruce was single-handedly trying to keep it repaired for us, but in order to save us, it's a great expense. But which we appreciated, but it needs a new roof, and we're going to have to hire a professional. So you'll probably be getting a letter from us, maybe for the first time, asking that you contribute to this. And just to make sure, this is our outreach, this is our missionary work. Everyone says, oh, it's wonderful, it's free, it's so great. Well, yeah, but it's not exactly free, not exactly. And Jeremy, frankly, he's worth twice what we pay him. And Linda now is helping, too, with the Internet. And they get, for what they do, very little. It would be great to be able to give more to them. So please, and especially those who have it, to give. Tom from New York was telling me yesterday about all these organizations. They send out letters regularly. Don't forget, this isn't free. This is our missionary work, and those who take it seriously should give out of the abundance of their hearts. Any questions? All right. The second is Carol was remembering Mr. Evans. When Mr. Evans was here, he instructed readers with several beautiful thoughts on how to read. And she remembers them all, because she was a reader at that time, and she's written them down. Mr. Evans, was considered, people would tell him, and this was in those days, people within the movement, trained readers, that he was the best natural reader that they had ever heard. And in our church, this is what is most important, that you are natural, not, what is it?
Pretentious,
you know,
not trained.
Not trained, that it comes from your heart. We don't want any affectations. And so she'll read, she's going to read it to us today, and then we will email it to all our readers, and we will post it on the reader scheduling section for readers, so you can have it, those of you who want it. Okay, Carol.
The first thing is, read with conviction and strength. A too soft voice puts the congregation to sleep. When reading Bible stories, have three voices. The narrator, that's the reader. God, read it with strength and power. And other characters. Just with subtle voice changes, but enough to be noticed. Listening to recordings of your reading is a great help. Read Bible stories as though you are there, seeing the event take place, and convey that picture to the congregation. They need to feel like they are witnessing the scene. Draw them in. And when speaking to God, as in Psalms, speak with reverence. While reading Science and Health, read as though you are talking to the congregation in a conversational tone, but conveying an important message. Authoritative, not a friendly tone, but talking, not so much like reading. A pause just before an important point is an effective way of calling attention to it and attracting the congregation's attention. When reading familiar Bible stories or citations in Science and Health, look for some element that may not have been brought out before and bring it out. Keep it fresh and new. Listen to the recordings of everything you read. It's good to hear if voice inflections were strong enough to convey the meaning and if the reading would hold the attention of the listener. That's one thing Mr. Evans used to say very often, to listen to it. Would you want to sit and listen to that?
Excellent. Now, of course, the main thing is to demonstrate, to be there. I thought, you know, Fairley has never had any training, and when she reads the Bible, you all know, she does all the things that were listed there, and you feel like you're there in the story because she reads it with such passion, I guess, or just you do. She is there. She is there, telling you the story. Gary, you want to say
anything? No, I think that covers it. And when reading Science and Health, I like to think that what you're doing is you're not reading something. You're letting God use you to speak to His creation.
These are all beautiful points. And one thing Mrs. Evans said, and perhaps this is the most important point of all, your reading will be as well as the life that you lived in the preceding week. You cannot conjure this up on Sunday morning or whenever you're reading. And I'm addressing scriptural fruitage, all of you that read anything. You can't conjure it up. If you have been disobeying God all week, and then you try to get up there and sound with following all this advice, and it would be just advice because you haven't been living it, then you will still fall flat on your face. You've got to be living it the best of your ability all week, and only then will you come forth with conviction and power, and you will do all of these things naturally. And this is what makes a good reader. It's also why, if you're in a church and you feel it's you falling asleep or it's not good, it's because of all of these things that are talked about. Anyone else who wants to speak to this?
Well, I got to say, I feel it's this type of reading that has enabled the growth on YouTube. People hear it and they know it's something different.
Thank you. You see, when you have been living it, you're gonna speak the words with an understanding, and that conveys itself. It is a paramount necessity. We cannot have just prattle. And one thing Bruce always says is, when you get up to read, you pause a minute and do what, Bruce?
Take a big breath. Yeah. And rush into it. Because the reading is much slower than normal speaking. If you're in a listening mode, think about what would you like to listen to. And besides that, especially Science and Health, the message there is very condensed. Every word's carefully chosen. To be read in a way that the listening audience grasps the message. It can't be rushed. It's got to be poised. And the thing that's helped me is this poem by Grace Stitch. It starts out, "This is a sacred and selfless hour." It finishes with, "And I too listen humbly."
Beautiful. If you don't know that poem, you all should know it. It's on our website. And
yes, Reader's Prayer.
The Reader's Prayer.
The link to it is right on the top of the Wednesday Testimony Readings page each week.
But you pause at the beginning to know that Christ goes before you and to feel your unity with the Father and know that the Father is using you, not you. And you're not speaking to people who don't understand. You're speaking to other ideas of God who do understand. And in that way, you'll reach them. And the pace of it must be demonstrated, too. It is important not to go too fast, or you'll lose your readers. But if you go too slow, you'll put everyone to sleep. So it can't be humanly done. You've got to be feeling it. And when you feel it, your timing will be correct. And what did you find, Jeremy? Some readers, they're done in?
Oh, yeah. Previously, when we had recordings for the weekly lessons, sometimes they would be as quick as 17 minutes. But it feels to me, when it sounds right, it's closer to 25 minutes. So that's quite a big difference there.
So in other words, some readers would race through it. And I know if someone's racing through it, I'm not getting it. I need it a little slower. And you will naturally pause at the right places and give your reader time to think about things.
Yeah, these sentences, as Bruce said, there is a huge amount within each sentence, especially in science. So you need to pause after each sentence to let the audience digest that sentence. And God will guide you. But Mrs. Evans used to say, before she would read or before she would give a sermon, she would pause and she would ask God, what is the need? What do you want your children to hear? And then it would come out. Because what we feel is not the words. What we feel is what's in your heart. That's what everybody else will feel.
This is Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. Just on this topic, one thing is, I was a reader, but one thing that I got a lot out of was just practicing every day and then practicing with the second reader at least once before we went up to read. If there's where I would do it every day out loud, and that would sort of get a lot of the kinks out, so I wouldn't make as many mistakes on the day that I actually had to read. And one other thing, I heard a story of Mrs. Eddy hearing her own reading, and the reader was so flat, attempting to try to keep I guess the idea was to keep human personality out of the reading, that she didn't recognize her own reading, her own writings, because it was so void of any sort of feeling or life. So, just an interesting story.
Thank you. It's very important, especially for the Bible readers, that they pronounce, and also Science and Health, that you can pronounce the words and that kind of thing. So practice.
Practice, right?
Yes.
Like in anything else.
Yeah. But too much practice will overkill it, too. It has to be just the right amount, or you get too much thinking and not letting God use you. Lawrence, did you want to say anything before we go on?
Yeah, because I think the too much practice makes it as if you are back in the human mind doing it.
Yeah.
Completely ask God to help me. You know, after all, it's the mind that gave the words, it's the mind that will speak it. So, and practice that way, then it's just enough. And just consistent practice, really, with God is what does the demonstration, I feel.
Thank you. Absolutely true.
I find I practice it until I love it. And when I love it, then I've got it.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And that's what she does with the magazine, too. We work on it until we feel we love it. And there's nothing in it that we don't love, then it's okay to go out. Because it must have that unction of love. Everything we do has to have love to it, or we are a sounding
brass. Tinkling
cymbal.
Well, we certainly do feel it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Subject today is God, the only cause and creator. Our golden text, Proverbs. The Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth. By understanding hath he established the heavens. We had a wonderful Bible study yesterday. For those of you who missed it, the Bible study is really almost essential to your growth. And there were many beautiful comments made. Dale spoke on this one particularly, so but if you want to hear it, listen, those of you who weren't there. I think we'll start today with the watching point.
Watch number 209. Watch lest you approach your problems as if you had to use your understanding to solve them, when the only scientific attitude with which to approach a problem is to know that you have none. Divine mind holds the solution for every problem on the basis that to God there are no problems. Thus, you do not solve a problem in Christian Science. You reflect the mind that knows no problems, and the effect of this reflection on your seeming problem is to meet it, whatever it may be. Human sense then rejoices, declaring that the problem has been solved. In reality, the belief that you had a problem has been destroyed. The student who goes around believing that he has problems and seeking help from divine mind to solve them will find that attitude may prove a deterrent. From the human standpoint, everything is a problem. From the divine standpoint, there are no problems.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, someone in the human mind, whatever you say to them, problem. Everything, oh my gosh, how am I going to do it? We don't have enough, we just can't do this. Everything's a problem. In the divine mind, there's always this feeling of buoyancy and an answer and seeing what's right, the solution to it. I found it very interesting. One of the things that those of us in the practice, when Mrs. Evans was around, we were required to read in collected writing, Signal Young's article, Christian Science Practice. And I remember this at the time, it was many years ago when I read this, but it was something I hadn't thought about. He says on page 16, how to develop a practice. Realize there is no practice. the real way to get a practice is to really know every day and all the time that you have time to know that there is no disease, no men and women and children or any other creature that is sick or going to die, that the evidence of God's universe is the only evidence there is, that his law is ever operative. If you really know that with the hope of bringing God's kingdom to pass, you will have an excellent practice, and it will come in order. Know that scientifically there is no need of healing. Know that it is Christ who does the healing. You want to work, of course, but you also want to get to heaven. That is Bignell Young. The watching point was Carpenter, and they're saying the same thing, aren't they?
And according to the BOD, they're both unauthorized literature.
That's why they're trouble.
So realize it lightens all burdens to know this. Otherwise, you just get down in the muck with all these problems everywhere you go. So think of it that way. And remember, when you are seeing everything as a problem, and believe me, I've done it. Oh, everything I hear, oh my gosh, something else I got to work on. Well, then I know I'm in the wrong mind, and I need to refresh myself with what God is saying.
And Mrs. Eddy says, science and health, this human existence, she refers to it as an enigma. And what is an enigma?
The unsolvable mystery.
It's a problem without a solution.
Well, I know this week, after reading that, and I was thinking about it the other day, that I used to say a lot that I enjoy challenges, and then I realized by saying that, I also can't be annoyed when my life is challenging. I need to think about this differently. So I was thinking about that. I just need to say, I enjoy having the opportunity to do what God wants me to do.
And to see the unreality of the problem, whatever it is.
Yeah, I very much enjoy all these ways that my perspective has shifted for the better.
Well, I think that's a good attitude. I felt that way myself, where I would look forward to problems. But what I was looking forward to was I was looking forward to being forced to get closer to God. Mrs. Eddy refers to them as stepping stones.
And proofs of God's care.
Exactly.
Because you do rise higher when you meet it, with God. If you sink down with the problem and complain and carry on and seek all these material means, then you're slushing around in the muck. But when you turn to God for the answers, you will rise above it.
And I think the reason I developed that attitude was when I was growing up, there was an attitude in the Boston church that the whole point of Christian Science was to have a problem-free life. So that if anybody ever did face a problem, well, that was like, you know, that was the worst sin you could. I mean, that was a terrible thing. Well, it's not a terrible thing. It's just something that's forcing you closer to God. It's forcing spiritual growth.
Opportunities, yes.
Yeah.
You can ask, what lesson do I need to learn from this? What lesson is this here to teach me? And if you see it in that way, you'll learn wonderful lessons and you'll go up higher on the scale of being.
So
trials are proofs of God's care.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. So while it's essential to understand that there are no problems, honestly, I'm not quite there yet. And when a problem does face me, I've learned not to take it personally and get discouraged by it, but rather it's a wake-up call.
And that this is how we address the absolute and the relative. I loved what Shahida, is she there today? Well, she wrote on the forum about, the title of it was Getting into Agreement with God's Vision. I like that. Getting into Agreement with God's Vision. And she talked about Ezekiel and the dry bones, and, you know, because he dry bones, what are you going to do with that? But because he got in agreement with God's vision, he saw something entirely different. And then, of course, with Abraham and Sarah. I mean, it would seem that Sarah was way past childbearing, and she had to get in agreement with God's vision and see that nothing is impossible to God, as the lesson says. Is anything too hard for the Lord? And that's what we all need to do, get in agreement with God's vision. And then it goes along with Colleen. This is a very important statement in Science and Health on page 259, and Colleen wrote about it on the forum. Immortal ideas, pure and perfect and enduring, are transmitted by the divine mind through divine science, which corrects error with truth and demands spiritual thought, divine concepts, to the end that they may produce harmonious results. You think about that. With any problem you have, you're calling on God's pure, perfect, and enduring ideas. And they're transmitted. You can look up that word that comes to you from directly from God through divine science, transmitted to you. And it's going to correct any error, whatever is troubling, whatever it is, financial, physical, emotional. It's going to correct it, because this is the right idea of who and what you are. And demand, this is a demand. It's not just a suggestion, or maybe it'll happen once in a while, or you should do it once in a while. It demands spiritual thoughts, divine concepts, to the end that they may produce harmonious results. So you don't accept any halfway position. You let it work, 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 keep working to the end, and then you'll get the right results. And I liked what Colleen said about, well, what did you, is she here?
Yes.
Yeah, what did you say about vision?
I could read the whole thing. I don't know exactly what part you're talking about. For me, what this meant was the demand is moment by moment, and holding the spiritual thought, the spiritual idea. And also with Abraham and Sarah, it's not like, you know, you hold an idea till the end of a mortal life. It's a difference between living, knowing that we're immortal, and that God gives us what we need every moment, as opposed to trying to just get what we want in a mortal sense, and what this would be possible at 20 or 30 years old, but not possible at 100 years old. Or, you know, it's knowing that that's not who we are. We're immortal beings, and the demand is to embrace spiritual thoughts. That's our being, and we'll always be like that forever. It never ends.
Thank you. Did you see what she wrote about the vision? Remember, because this is where people get really boggled down, this lesson, God, the only cause and creator. There are not two creations.
I can read what I wrote if you...
No, go ahead, Liz.
That.
No, you paraphrase.
I think I have it. It says right here, this view. Okay, I can see that the mortal view is the wrong way to look at things. This viewpoint lacks principle and any reason to be. God is love and is all. I can certainly demand of myself, moment by moment, to see with the eyes that God gives me. These are the eyes that we are blessed with, which can see the truth so easily and purely.
Thank you. That's what I liked. God gave you these eyes. That's a good thought. He gave them to you so you will see his creation. And when you use them for that purpose, how can they get old or boggled up in any way? You're seeing, again, you, as Shahida said, you're coming into agreement with God's vision. It's a beautiful thought. a fresh thought. So remember that about your eyes, about all your faculties. They're given to you by God, and they operate according to Him. And when you get in the way and start seeing what God never made and talking about what God may ever made, or hearing it, feeling it, all those things, if you start misusing your faculties, then they give you trouble. So God gave you those eyes. They're perfect eyes, and they see His creation. That's the truth. And there's not two creations. There's not this one that's just horrible that we have to get rid of, and oh my gosh, it's just awful. All the lust, all the terrible things that are going on in the world, holy moly. No, you're just in the Adam dream, giving the Adam dream life. There's one creation. We see through a glass darkly, but we have to see this. Mrs. Eddy, it says she even loved the blade of grass under her foot. And also what Ray so beautifully wrote about on the forum a while ago, about every leaf on every tree is what?
The reflection of the Creator.
Well, declaring God is love. When I drove to church this morning, I was thinking about that. We were having the most gorgeous spring. We've had all this rain, and everything is so green. And look at all those leaves. They're declaring God is love, every one of them. Now, that's looking at our world with tenderness and love and not with condemnation. So we're all just a bunch of jerks. There is the one creation, and we must always be acknowledging it and using these eyes that God gave us, our ears, everything that we have, for that one purpose. So, let's see, where else was I going? Oh, there was, along with that, and I think I'm going to have Gary read, I guess. This is from Martha Wilcox, because she explains this so beautifully in Scientific Translation.
Martha Wilcox. Not a single blade of grass, a leaf, or a flower is material when viewed correctly. It is spirit, mind, which conceives, outlines, and forms these ideas, which multiply and replenish the earth. Mrs. Eddy says, Science and Health, page 191, quote, by its own volition, not a blade of grass springs up, not a spray buds within the veil, not a leaf unfolds its fair outlines, nor a flower starts from its cloistered cell. End quote. All natural beauty and grandeur, from the freshness of the morning to the calm of the evening and the starry heavens at night, are the presence of the one spirit and are therefore spiritual. All natural activities, such as eating and walking and resting and hearing and seeing and thinking and feeling, are not in nor of matter, but are the conscious functionings of the one spirit and are therefore spiritual. All natural love and affection and gladness and happiness and joy and peace and harmony are not in nor of person, but are the one conscious life or spirit in being, and are therefore spiritual and unceasing. All things pertaining to and essential to our normal state of living, from a pin to a palace, when rightly viewed, are not matter, but are spiritual ideas at hand.
Thank you. So what are you seeing? What are you dealing with? Are you seeing this? Are you understanding the one creation? Because before I came into this correct sense of science, I had great difficulty with this. I saw the two creations, and I thought one we just had to get rid of. You might as well just, you know, burn the earth. It's a horrible way to think and live, and it's not Christian Science. So it says it's, things are spiritually conceived and brought forth, not materially. And we must see and acknowledge that all the time. We have to. If we're not, we're falling into that we are personal creators, egotistical creators, and that we could create something that God would not. And that's a paraphrase from Science and Health. So,
is that a question?
Go ahead.
I just, in regards to the imperfection, you think you're seeing, like, you're walking down the street and you see homeless people or someone begging for food or money, or, I mean, you're knowing, you're reversing that, I'm saying actively, then and there. You're not indulging it, I guess. I don't know, does that make any sense? It's like,
what is your
that's the practice, correct?
Right, well, we have a story that was told to us about a practitioner who passed a man, such as you described, on his way to work.
On his way to work every day, he would pass by, and there would be a homeless person sitting by on the street begging. And this practitioner, Mr. Davis.
No, I forget his name.
Anyway, whatever, this practitioner, he would pass by, he would declare, perfect God, perfect man, perfect universe. And that's not it. And you don't have to have it. And he declared that mentally to himself every day as he walked by this person. Then, a little bit after that, he didn't see the person there. And then shortly after that, this stranger walked into his office, a well-dressed man, and introduced himself and asked him, do you recognize me? And the practitioner said, no. The man said, I was the man who was homeless, sitting, and you walked by every day, and you did something to me as you walked by. I don't know what it was, but I now have a good job, and I have a good life, and I feel like I need to thank you.
He felt something. And so this is what we do. And just because we're saying we see the perfect creation, it also means we can be much more aware of what isn't right in the creation. And that's where our job is, to correct it in our thought. And we will never know how much good, I mean, in this case, he found out eventually how much good it did. But when we are constantly knowing this, the things, the people, everywhere that are receptive to this truth are blessed by it. These are laws of God. I don't doubt it. This is what our watches do. Maybe we don't see the sudden transformation right away, but that doesn't mean that it's not having its effect. Era wants us to think, oh, nothing's gone on, nothing's happening. Well, that's just not true. God's the only power, and you're knowing what already is true and denying the false picture. So that's how you work, and it's constant work. And many of you have told stories. I know Pilar has told stories. She's in New York City. Tom from New York. Linda being on the subway. I remember Zari once in Germany told stories where there's been perhaps a horrible situation going on, and then they have seen changes. Know this truth.
Well, I certainly feel that happened to me. I feel like I was on the other side, because I meet people from this church, not at this church, but we were, you know, somewhere else, and there was a big difference. They felt like, oh man, these people, these people were different. My life was not in a good place then, and I know it's not an accident that I went from there to here, you know. There was that.
It's the same for ourselves, too. I mean, the wrong thoughts that are telling us something different, you keep changing that, challenging them. It's not the truth, and know the truth. Pretty soon we're changed, too.
Yes.
Exactly. And it's God or truth
yeah.
that
yeah.
does the changing, isn't it?
Yes, of Christ.
Yeah. I mean, it took me a while to finally get this, but we individually can't change anybody else. We can't be responsible for anybody else. But we can be responsible for what we see and what we think, what we accept as truth. And when we refuse to accept as truth that which is not true, when we individually demand the truth in our own and if that demand is made with love, Sassetti wrote, love is a mighty spiritual power. That demand in our own consciousness is a spiritual power, and it's a power for good.
As we do this, we are bringing in, individually and collectively, the millennium, the New Jerusalem. We have a grand responsibility, a sober responsibility to be doing this in our daily life, and that's why we talked about it yesterday, but the idea of the demands of man every hour in which to work out the problem of being. Consecration to good does not lessen man's dependence on God, but heightens it. Neither does consecration diminish man's obligation to God, but shows the paramount necessity of meeting them. And then, Christian Science takes naught from the perfection of God, but it ascribes to him the entire glory, which is what Gary was saying. So you have many opportunities. You are either working out this problem of being in truth, or you are accepting this Adam dream, false sense of creation. Adam, where art thou? What are you doing? And it says, the tree and herb do not yield fruit because of any propagating power of their own, but because they reflect the mind which includes all. It's so beautiful. And, you know, there's that story of Mrs. Eddy and what happened, Bruce.
What would be the apple trees?
Apples, I think.
Middle of the winter, as far as...
No, go ahead, Shardy.
Well, it was the middle of winter, and there are two stories about when she made blossoms happen. And because of her love and her understanding, the tree bloomed, it blossomed. And it was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, that's, is there any more, Florence, that you wanted to add?
No, that was the story that I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was with a young child at the time, which I'm wondering if she would be able to do that with an adult who was educated, but the child is receptive. And she picked up the flower and gave it to the child and let them see.
So it is. She understood. And as we study her writings faithfully and get to know more and more, in many ways we've just scratched the surface to this beautiful science, we will see more and more. She says eventually, you know, you'll have ice cream and all of that without having to go through the process of making it. It'll just be sort of like Star Trek.
She certainly knows how to keep us engaged.
She does. And Parthen spoke to the fact that the idea how important it is to know and to feel God's hand on us and to be knowing. Amanda read about it on Wednesday, feeling and knowing this truth, how important that is. And in doing that, to become one with the Father and healings result for yourself and for others. And I want to mention, too, this idea of God's creation, that it's not created in vain. I talked about it yesterday, but it's most important. Not created in vain. God is directing everyone's path in righteousness. And when we see and hear otherwise, we must pray. Something popped up recently on my phone about the youth being, you know, suicide rate going up, all of this kind of thing, because they need, what do they need?
The love of God.
Love of God, and they need a purpose in life. They need to know why they are here, and it can't be some superficial purpose. That's not enough. I read somewhere recently, it wasn't anything to do with Christian Science, but it was someone saying, you know, they had to know why they were here. Oh, I know, it was what's his name, Will Smith's daughter, Willow. She went through a time she was cutting herself. She was so distraught. And, I mean, here she would seem to have everything, you know, all kinds of money, and she has her own band, and I don't know how old she is. She's a teenager, I think. Anyway, she said, I don't know why I was here. What's this all about? And then I remember feeling that way. It's a great deep anguish. And everyone must know that you are here. You're created for a purpose. It's not in vain. We've got to feed our children. They start off knowing this because they're pure little innocent children of God. That's why Jesus loves the children, as did Mrs. Eddy. But then they get educated falsely. So important. This is also knowing part of God's creation. I'm going to have Gary end again with something from Arthur Wilcox. But before I go into that, I wanted to mention something Dear Royce gave me. Maybe I knew this at one point, but we know that Mrs. Eddy changed the manual. We know she changed Science and Health. Excuse me. The BOD changed the manual after she passed on. The BOD changed Science and Health after she passed on. And they also changed Miscellany. And Royce sent me a list of all the changes. Some things were additions, which I didn't feel were bad. But a couple notable ones was she called it Miscellany. It's now called First Church of Christ Scientists and Miscellany.
Right. I found that in Richard Oakes.
Yeah, she found these in the Richard Oakes books, which I know I read at one point. They also added at the very beginning, what kind of literature is it?
Authorized,
yes. Well, and there are many other things. But thank you, Royce. And we have all of the changes if anyone's interested. Okay, we are going to end with Martha Wilcox, The Power of a Right Idea.
Yes. Mrs. Eddy's definite life purpose. Mrs. Eddy records her life purpose. She says, "My life purpose is to impress humanity with the genuine recognition of practical, operative Christian Science." And she further says to us, "Drink with me the living waters of spirit, of the spirit of my life purpose." That's Miscellany, page 207. There was no doubt in Mrs. Eddy's mind that she had a definite purpose in life to fulfill. And what this definite purpose was, no matter what others might do, this divine purpose was definitely fixed and established in her thought. And she knew that she must follow this definite direction in life in order to fulfill her divine purpose and give to humanity a visible proof of a practical, operative science when applied to human affairs. Jesus' definite life purpose. Jesus, too, was keenly aware that he had a definite purpose in life to fulfill. In answer to Pilate's question, he said, "To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth." John 18. Both Jesus and Mrs. Eddy had a clear sense of the signification of their so-called human experience. They recognized that no one ever was born out of due time. They knew that they had a definite purpose to fulfill, and they knew that they had the power and intelligence from God with which to fulfill that purpose. Our definite life purpose. are we, as Christian Scientists, awake to the fact that we too have a definite life purpose? And are we following a definite direction in life in order to fulfill this life purpose? Today, as never before, we need to recognize the significance and value of the existence of each so-called individual. We should watch and not become mesmerized with the seeming lack of value that is placed on the individual at this present hour. We should not just close our eyes and permit our thought to stand dormant concerning this lack of appreciation for human existence. In order to fulfill our definite purpose and be a visible witness for truth, we should be keenly aware of our present individual existence in its higher spiritual aspects. We should be deep thinkers. We should vision happier days for the human family. We should prove that an abundant practical life is the one eternal life at hand. We should participate in and rejoice in the present fulfillment of this present liberating dispensation, the dispensation of the coming of the Son of Man, which is the reality of all things being made visible in human consciousness. As individual Christian Scientists, we need a greater love for God and a greater love for man in our hearts in order that our sublime life purpose may be carried out into effect. Each one of us has a sublime task to perform. We should so live and so love that God or truth is made comprehensible to us, and that we may hear his voice saying, "This is the way, walk ye in it." Isaiah 30.
So, that is the truth. We all have this purpose, and we can walk in it and be of great use to our world. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.